Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Welcome back. I know I was playing Frank Sinatra tunes because Frank Sinatra used to eat at Eli's, but there is also something very Frank Sinatra-esque about the conversation we are going to have. My old friend, old dear friend, Phil Johnson is in here. He is starring in a show called A Jewish Joke. It's a play. It's a play. Also in here, Phil used to run a nightclub called Bumbala. We'll see how this all works. We'll see how this all works together, or you can all say, Rick, you're an idiot at the end of this hour. Also in here is a friend of Jim Sherman's, the director, Richard Shaven, and playwright, Michael Richlewski, right?
Close enough. Richlewski. Yeah.
Richlewski. Oh, that's so easy.
Yeah. Phonetic, take the Y out.
Yeah, take the Y out and put an I in there.
There you go.
He is... not only a playwright, he's a longtime English teacher at Schurz High School, that beautiful, beautiful school on the north side that happens to be the alma mater of my father, Herman Kogan. So welcome, gentlemen.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Let's talk theater. Phil, you not only are in this show as the main one-man show, you co-wrote it, too.
Yeah, I did. I wrote it in San Diego. That's where I'm based in now.
Why?
Why San Diego?
Yeah.
Just worked out that way. I was, after I left Chicago and I stopped doing shows on the road like Les Mis and stuff like that, I wanted to try comedy in Los Angeles. So I kind of go back and forth between Los Angeles and San Diego now. And
do you find San Diego nurturing, good, fertile territory for
Don't
you?
Don't you?
I know. I've been there once for like a day. I think the I hear the weather's very nice, but
I mean
creatively
no humidity,
and artistically.
Which is a little different than here.
Yeah. Michael, you have been writing plays, fooling around with plays for some time, I understand.
Long time.
A long time. And you put off writing to have a family and have kids.
A kid.
When did you first start writing plays? Or did you write all sorts of things when you were younger?
I think when I was in high school, I had this facility for writing dialogue, and I would do these dialogue pieces, and people enjoyed them. And
You perform them?
No, just at school, you know, just reading it and talking it, going out to the Golden Nugget and presenting something to a couple people sitting next to me.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to St. Gregory.
Okay.
Up there on Bryn Mawr and Ash.
Yeah, sure, Chicago guy.
And so, yeah, I just really, I have a pretty good ear for people talking. So, you know, I managed to use that as a writer for the last 30 or 40 years.
Well, in this show, Chops, is based on, it is inspired by conversations that you overheard or imagined when you were working clubs, right?
Well, not when I was working clubs, but a specific bar called the Portside. It was a bar restaurant. It was on Montrose and Albany. Okay. And I had gotten my buddy and I, we were in our 23, 24. We had an apartment a couple blocks away, and we used to go there. They had great seafood. Monday night they had schooners of beer with smelt for $1.99. You couldn't beat that. Every Monday we were there. And we really liked the place. And then I left the country for a year. I hitched around North Africa and Europe, and ended up in a Maoist commune, and you don't want to hear the whole story on that, but I came back.
Sounds like another play.
Another play, down the road, put it in the back burner for a while. And so I just started writing, and I was always writing. So we had moved back, so I went to visit my friend at the apartment that we had, and he said, let's go over to the Port Side, because it was a regular place we visited. And the guy that owned it, his name was Nick Aegis, and he was a bartender personality on Rush Street. And had been for years. He was a tall guy with a bald head and big mutton chop, whiskers.
Yeah.
And
that look is out now, I think.
Nah, it's gone. It's gone. And we're sitting there at the end of the bar, and Ray says, Ray's my buddy. Ray says, hey, Nick, why don't you give Mike a job? He owes me money. And he looked at me and says, "You want a job?" And I said, I don't know. It didn't even cross my mind. He says, are you interested? I says, "Yeah." He says, "Are you a good athlete?" I said, "Yeah." He says,
"You know, a softball team?"
Well, he says to me, "Can you turn a double play?" And I looked at him. I says, "Yeah." He says, "Come tomorrow at 4. And I just thought, what a great audition line for somebody, you know? Because aren't turning double plays about the same as being a bartender? You got to move your arm to the left and the right. And
so he had to send a bar at a softball team?
I did not ever do that.
Really?
No. Although I was in Hamilton's up there, and the Ruggers would come in and dance across the bar. So I did have – I've experienced enthusiastic crowds. But this bar that I went into, that I started working at, you know, his buddies from Rush Street came in.
Yeah.
And these were, you name it, you know, and the place was just filled with, you know, there was card sharps and pool hustlers occasional transvestite, off-duty cops. I mean, the place was sort of wild.
Yeah.
And what they do is when it was 2 a.m., they turn off the light outside.
Yeah,
and turn down the light here and roll joints and make shots. And here I am, a 25, 26-year-old kid, listening to them tell their stories of Rush Street. And I'm like, wow, someday I got to turn this.
Did you take notes on that?
I did.
You did not?
I did take notes. But I some of the stories are very, very well remembered in my head.
That's interesting. Phil, what inspired this show? Phil's show is, you'll get all the information. They're all going to be here for an hour. Is a Jewish joke playing at Victory Gardens through next Sunday. AJewishJoke.com is the website. What inspired your show?
Well, I've always been a big fan of Jewish humor, always, my whole life. It was something that was so dear to me. I didn't actually know what it was called till I think I was in college. And then it was, you know, my life. Johnson, of course.
Yeah.
And I had an uncle through my partner, who, his Uncle Bernie, was kind of this great old turtle kind of guy who'd shuffle in, and then out of the side of his mouth, he'd sneak up to you and say, "Hey, get a job." You know, he was just one of those great sunshine boys kind of guy, and I wanted to do something with him. So it's a really, really funny guy in the worst situation possible, on the worst day of his life. Mm. And what does he do? That's what the play's about.
Mm. Mm. How do you deal with writers? How can you deal with writers, Richard Chavin? And do you know, when you see and read a play, can you tell immediately if it's going to work?
Maybe not immediately, and it might be, you know, several iterations down the road before it does work, but if there's a spark there, if there's something there, sure, absolutely. And that just, after enough time, I have for many years been an artistic associate at Chicago Dramatists, which is a playwrights theater that does just brilliant work in new play development and nurturing of playwrights. And through that association, I have been honored to work on a whole lot of new and original scripts over the last several years.
Yeah. So it sharpens your diagnostic skill, let's say, when you can look at a show and go, this will work.
No question about it. And theater is the single most collaborative of arts, at least it is if it's done well.
Yeah, I agree.
And so the first and foremost is that relationship between playwright and director, and possibly dramaturg, depending on how you're structured.
Yeah.
And it's a delightful process.
We got to take a break, but these three gentlemen are going to be here for the next 45 minutes, and we will figure out how you, too, can write a play. That's not what this show's about. You have to go see. It's not like that.
72 easy steps.
Time for an infomercial about 72 easy steps. Live a very interesting life for 40 years. Sit down. Buy a computer and start typing. They are Phil Johnson, who is starring in and co-wrote A Jewish Joke at Victory Gardens through next Sunday. Michael Ryszulski and director Richard Chavin. Michael, the author and an English teacher at Schurz High School. Their show is Chops. Go to very easy websites, ladies and gentlemen, ajewishjoke.com, Chops. 2016.com. We will be right back. There's a basis for a play. That's Sinatra playing. I'm having too much fun in here with And the amazing thing about it, even though you, author, playwright Michael Ryszulski, is relatively... I know you've had plays produced before, but do you now feel with this chops at Theater Wit through August 21st, do you feel part of the artistic... And these two guys, Phil Johnson and your director, Richard Chazen, probably make you feel at home. Do you feel part of the theater community?
I think I do. I have a lot of friends that are in theater. I was at Chicago Dramatist as a network playwright for 10 years. And
what's that mean, network playwright?
It's playwrights who have just joined, and they haven't necessarily had a production, but they want to bring their plays in and have them analyzed and have them critiqued, as opposed to a resident playwright, which is somebody who has had a play or two produced.
Do you feel insecure when you first went in there?
No.
You don't seem like a guy who would feel
I thought,
insecure.
I would read these other playwrights.
And say, Jesus, I'm better than these guys.
I don't know if I go that far, but I mean, right. I'm just like, okay, I can handle this.
Well, I mean, it was nurturing then and empowering?
Very much so. And you know, Richard, the late Russ Tuttero, who ran a wonderful ship there, great guy.
Yeah.
And he got me a reading with Richard. And this is about 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we've gone through this 8 years of, you know, touching base every, you know, couple months. And
was it
know.
A reading of this show Chops or
oh yeah, mm-hmm. We had a reading. We had two or three readings. One in the a couple in the theater, I think. One in a basement or maybe in one of the rooms they have there. And finally, in the last couple years, it got so good and so clean. It was 120 pages, and then Richard turned it into 74. So I've really learned.
Yeah, that's what directors do.
Yeah, cuts the even the commas die.
Yeah. So it was kind of like a long day's journey kind of show,
yeah.
And now it's something that might be able to get out of stage somewhere. The reviews have been good for all your both shows, have they not? Do you ever worry about that kind of thing? Richard, you've been around. I mean, you're the most, I guess, experienced Chicago theater hand here.
Sure. I mean, you don't necessarily worry about it in terms of any one person's comment on your art or your collaborator's art. But on the practical side, you know, let's face it, it will affect your box office.
Sure.
And the scene has changed so much. I mean... You know, back in the day, there was basically there was the Trib, the Sun-Times, the Reader, and then you know the collected the gay papers together, Windy City
right.
Times and
yeah.
Gay Chicago,
yeah.
Nightlife, Nightlines. Then you know New City and several of the other smaller papers started to come up, and now with the bloggers,
it's got to be you're
it's
right.
crazy.
It's got to be just crazy because it's like. What is that thing that rates different restaurants? I mean, Yelp.
Yelp, yes.
Yeah. Yelp. There are people who seem crazy on there to me.
There's 15 or 20.
Lunatics?
If you go to theater in Chicago. If you go to theater in Chicago, is it .com or .org? But it lists, you know, and a lot of theaters have 10, 15, 17 reviews. From the Tribune and the Sun-Times on down to somebody's blog in their basement, I guess.
Yeah, the paper's reviews still mean.
Of course the Tribune obviously is still the 800-pound gorilla,
yeah,
and definitely can you know affect your box office, mm-hmm. And also you know Chris Jones who is the chief theater critic for the Tribune. Is a great writer and he's been around the block and he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, Hetty Weiss at the Sun-Times, Tony Adler at the Reader, great people who've been around a very long time. There's a fabulous history of theater criticism in this town.
No question. Dick Christensen.
Uh-huh. Yeah. May he rest in peace. Richard was fabulous. And,
yeah.
And even going back to Claudia Cassidy,
sure.
Who basically. Made Tennessee Williams a star.
Yeah.
So great tradition in this town.
How do you find, Phil, you're back in town now. How do you find the audiences here? I mean, you ran, and many of you may fondly remember, a club called Boombalo, which was really one of the great eclectic clubs in the days when a club owner, you and your sister, would try anything. And it was a beautiful space, too, on North Lincoln Avenue.
It was fun.
How do you see any difference in the crowds?
Well, I'm kind of new here.
Yeah,
being
I know.
Gone for about 20 years, I got here and I felt like, oh, look, I'm on Mars, because it's so different.
Yeah.
So different and so wonderful. It's been a ball. I've been having like a carnival time here. The audiences for our show have been great. My show's different because it starts funny and it ends very poignantly.
Yeah.
So
it deals with, I mean, you can explain, all I want to do is sell your shows during this whole, it's funny, but it also is dealing with a tragic time.
Yeah, he's a comedy screenwriter in 1950 Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very funny guy, you know, and he's successful, he's doing well. And this is the moment when the Blacklist is just peeking its head over the horizon. And he doesn't really want to know very much, but he's kind of been shuffling through. He's doing fine. He avoids as much trouble as he can.
Sure.
And he gets into a situation where he can't talk his way out of it. And it becomes really, it's a play about a guy who makes the hardest decision of his life, and he has to actually figure out what his own character is. He has to say, this is what I stand for, when he's been avoiding it his whole life.
Well,
so it's one of my favorite things I've ever worked on, and I worked on it in San Diego for a long time, and now I'm getting it out there, and I'll be in New York in September, and I have other places I'll be performing on the East Coast.
What inspired you? What was the seed of this thing?
Well, really, it was about how much I loved Jewish comedy. I love that it's such a pragmatic way of looking at things.
Yeah.
You know, things could always be worse. We could be dead, you know? I could lose a leg. So I love that way of looking at things, getting through the worst things in life with humor.
Yeah.
And this guy, his jokes are everything to him. That's how he gets through this. He clutches onto them.
Are these original jokes that you have written?
They're original, old 100-year-old jokes, actually. Yeah. That I researched intensely for several years.
Yeah.
Yes. So everybody knows them. That's the funny thing. I tell them, and people will tell me, that's not the punchline. You know, they'll tell me, my grandmother used to say this. You're ruining it. You know, I get that all the time in this show.
Oof.
It's very funny, and I love that back and forth with all the people who know more jokes than I do.
Where's this show going to move in New York?
It's going to be at a theater festival called United Solo. Which is kind of a contest, kind of a festival. So I'm doing that in September.
Oh, fantastic. That show runs through next Sunday at Victory Gardens. Now, back to Chops. You told a fabulous story about getting the, can you turn a double play? I'll give you a job. Was there a scene, when you sat down, I mean, maybe you're writing pieces of dialogue, Michael, or you're just... screwing around, when the show started to take shape for its first reading, let's say, what was a catalyst for that?
For having that first, you're talking about the first reading with Chicago Dramatist?
When you said to yourself, well, I've taken some notes here, now this may be a play.
It started as a series of stories being told with almost no monologue.
Yeah.
And, you know, people like stories, and if you're in a storytelling festival, that's why you're there. But if you're in the theater to see drama, to listen to one story after another is not going to cut it.
Correct.
So I had to create some sort of characters with some sort of conflict, and I developed the conflict, honed it down, sort of perfected it, and I think it comes out rather smoothly in the play. But it took years. Years.
Well, obviously, yeah. Yeah. That's one of the wonderful commitments of any people who stick to the arts, who don't give it up, because it really is a commitment, and it's not, I don't care, you know, unless you're, you know, Lin-Manuel, what's his name?
Miranda.
Miranda. It maybe doesn't come that easy. It's a great struggle, isn't it?
It is emotionally devastating sometimes, you know? You write the piece and people don't care for it. You put it in a drawer. You keep it there 3 years. You take it out. You write it again. And finally you say to yourself, you know, do I have faith in this? And I think to be a writer, at least for me, you have to have this naive belief that what you're writing is really important.
Yeah.
And I've always felt that what I'm writing is important.
Phil, you must think that too.
I do. I think you're absolutely right, because if you don't believe in it, how can you really express yourself with an audience? How can you really connect with an audience on those points?
Yeah, you can't be halfway. This has to be – this I believe in.
Richard, to close off this half hour, Richard Chavzin, the director of Chops most recently, it must be joyful to work with some writers. I'm not going to make a blank. You two guys are okay, but I can imagine that some are just impossible.
There's a range, of course. Yeah. You know, there's a continuum. But by and large, when I'm working with a living playwright, especially on a new play, you know, look, they're always welcome in the rehearsal room all the time. Now, we'll have a conversation about what, you know, certain, you know, bits of etiquette here, you know, vis-a-vis the actors, but they're always welcome. Now, I also say there are times when I strongly recommend you go away.
Yes, or you will because, be strangled.
Yeah, well, no. They'll want to, you know, say, you have to let the process happen and not all the right choices are made. And for specifically, for example, the first rehearsal or two after the actors are required to be off book, which means that they're memorized, right?
Memorized.
The first couple of rehearsals after that deadline, you want to be in the next zip code.
Yeah. We will return to this conversation with these fabulous people, director Richard Shavzin, playwright, and I got to keep saying it because it's
sure
my dad's school.
Got it.
It's my dad's school, playwright Michael Richlewski and my old friend Phil Johnson used to own a club called Boombola. Phil is here performing in ajewishjoke.com. That's the website. That's how to get tickets. And Michael and Richard are involved in CHOPS, CHOPS2016.com.
It ain't necessarily so.
It ain't necessarily so.
What ain't?
The things that your preacher is liable to teach you.
Oh, no, it ain't necessarily.
That's Frank Sinatra,
so.
Who visited Rush Street clubs in the 50s and 60s, and then he was too famous, and he had to go to Eli's Cheesecake. Keep a low profile. I am with director Richard Shavzin, playwright Michael Richlewski, and teacher at Schur's, and writer, actor Phil Johnson. Phil is here in A Jewish Joke at Victory Gardens Theater through next Sunday. Michael and Richard are involved in CHOPS at Theater Wit, which is on Belmont. There's such easy websites for you potential ticket buyers, ajewishjoke.com and CHOPS2016.com. You taught drama, Michael.
Yes, I did.
A bit.
Yes.
Because you were interested in drama, or because the Chicago public school system thought you should teach drama?
We didn't
drama?
Have it. We had a drama teacher there by the name of Jeff Burke, who was really a wonderful teacher, and he was there for 30 or 40 years. They renamed the auditorium after him, and he would do large musicals. And he retired, and there was nobody for a couple of years. I said, I'll do this, but I really don't want to do large musicals. And I remember how hellish they were in high school, and how I think I did the
Little
bells
Sunshine.
Yeah, I did the bells are ringing for one thing. I said, this is it. I'm not going to be part of this nonsense. And because, you know, it's hard to coordinate all this. So I said, well, the better approach would be take really powerful scenes from theater, put two kids together, let them work on it for a couple months, and let the other kids work on a couple other powerful scenes. So we put all these series of scenes together. We have scenes from Waiting for Godot, scenes from David Mamet, Glengarry, Glenn Ross. We did The Front Page. So it's exciting stuff. And then lots of different Hamlet. One of our students last year did Queen Margaret's speech in Henry VI, I think.
Did you learn anything for your own career in doing that? Did you get any kind of insights in – I'm wondering, you know, directing is not teaching. It's a different kind of thing. But in doing that, did it inform your work at all?
Well, I think I was able to emotionally support kids who were struggling. Huh. And, you know, you can do this because they would, you know, they at the beginning of the year, they can barely talk to you, let alone perform for 150, 200 kids,
yeah,
you know. And
yeah,
we had this particular room which could set up for like 150, and we would bring 8 straight classes.
Wow.
And it was like the baton death march for the without the death.
But yes, was, right. But the baton exhaustion march, yeah.
These kids would, you know, I says, we're doing 8 shows, and we're not stopping, and we're not getting, you better brown bag, because we're going to do one after the other. And we did it every year like that.
Wow.
And it was a lot of, and it really, really solidified the groups, you know, that group feel. We're in this together. We can do this. But, you know, I guess what I'm saying is I felt that I could help them. As far as what it did for my own writing, I don't know that it did that much.
Yeah,
I mean, I was working at a different level there.
Sure, sure. Phil, when you think and know that you're ready to go with a Jewish joke,
yeah,
who do you work with? I mean, because we're talking about this whole nature of theater is a great collaborative art. Who do you go to? Or do you just stand up there and go to an audience?
Because
an audience is also an audience is also a great collaborator. I think that
absolutely, especially for anything that's a comedy. You know, because a comedy, you just do it in front of previews are my favorite thing for any show.
Right,
work out the laughs. So. But I have a lot of great collaborators in San Diego. The woman who co-wrote my play, Marnie Friedman, my first director, David Ellenstein, and the director-producer I'm working with now, David Chack, who I met at the Association for Jewish Theater.
Yeah.
So it's been an uphill battle for a boy named Johnson to do a Jewish play. They look at me funny and, you know, they want to check things like, you know, below the belt, but
of course,
you know, because they need to make sure that I'm in the tribe.
Yeah,
I've had to work hard. I learned how to make kugel, you know, so I just try to ingratiate myself with my tribesmen.
Richard Chavson, a director is in a position of great authority, and actors and occasionally writers will look to you for guidance, for spiritual advice. How do you, what's your kind of creative MO, if I can use that? Do you have one, or is it different for every show or every person you're dealing with?
It's much more the latter. I mean, you're going to have a different relationship with every, not only every actor, but every designer. You're dealing with sets and lights and sound and costumes and props. And writers, and I have always, I'm not what is frequently called a concept director. I think I'm doing my best work when I don't leave footprints, and you know, nobody knows I've been there, and you let the actors do their thing, and you let the designers work show. I mean, put it on the stage has got to be the battle cry.
Let's talk about Chops. I want in the next 20 minutes, you, Phil, to talk more about a Jewish joke, but Chops, all I remember about the whole story is like you met these guys and could you turn a double play? It's a lot more than that.
Fast forward 40 years.
Exactly. So it's kind of, it's three guys who used to be players on Rush Street in the wildest day, 50s, 60s, Kelly's, Singapore, all those joints, Cabaret.
The Elbow Room, the Plug
all
Nickel.
All those joints, yeah. Did you do historical research on it, or you just knew that?
I don't pretend to go above my head and things like that. I've always been a jazz fan, and I've seen, you know, McCoy Tyner and Ito O'Day, Rush and Roland Kirk. I have sort of eclectic taste, but I'm not somebody, I had friends that, you know. There's a reference to a Clifford Brown song and the note progression. And a friend of mine who happened to be for many years the Friday night pianist at the Green Mill from 5 to 8, Ben Rudolph, he would be there for like a dozen years. He said, well, I'm going to explain how this works. He went from this key to this key back to this key. And so I put that in the script, but I knew nothing about what it was. It might have been nuclear physics, some sort of nuclear physics equation or something. No, that wouldn't have worked. What you don't know, don't try to fake it.
Yeah.
There was a great coincidence, though, when Russ Tutterow, the late Russ Tutterow, asked me to direct the reading of this back in 2008. I cottoned to it immediately because by sheer coincidence, when I was a young actor, waiting tables, bartending, so many others. I was for a couple of years at Sweetwater, which had been Mr. Kelly's.
Yes, and which is now Gibson's.
Which is now Gibson's. Some of the same owners as Sweetwater, not all. That was where I got a lot of my appreciation of the history because I learned a bunch of the history hanging out there and talking to some of those the patrons of that place back in the '80s.
Yeah, I just find it such a ripe crowd. I mean, I have not seen your play. I'm going to see your play, but it struck me as, wow, this is just a really good idea. You know, I don't know exactly what happens when these three older guys get together again with a woman involved, but just having them have been those kind of characters that they were, I see the dramatic possibilities.
Well, you know, in the middle of the play are three. There's a storytelling contest in the play, and it's in the middle of the play. And the other night, these guys were really clicking on all cylinders. And the first actor finished the story, and almost the entire audience burst into applause. And you don't find that sort of thing happening on upstage usually. The people are like, they're there and I'm here. But we all felt like we're together, I think, is what was going on. And then the second guy told his story, and again applause. And the third guy didn't quite happen because the story's broken into two parts, and so you couldn't follow. It didn't have that dramatic finality because something else was happening. But I thought, gosh, you know, that was exciting. I was thrilled that the audience
How often do you, as the playwright, go see the show? Because I remember, I'll tell you an example, Bob Green, the former columnist for the Tribune, wrote a musical with my great late friend Paul Galloway called Bagtime, which was directed by Bob Falls, starring B.J. Jones, and it had a run here. And I think Bob went every single show.
Oh, my God. Well, I've always tried to emulate Robert Falls.
No, he was Bob Green.
I'm talking about
Bob Green. Sorry.
Yeah.
I have gone to every show. There's been 4, 8, 5, 13. We're 13 down and 12 to go. I don't ask me why. It's my own neuroses.
It may not be a neuroses, though.
It
may just be, I mean, it may be a thrill.
Yeah, and this is, you know, I don't want to get too existential here, but I always feel
why
theater.
Not? That's what this show's all
about.
There you
go. No, but I always felt that theater was a sort of religious experience. And, you know, people certainly still go to churches and they have those religious, but this is sort of a religious secular experience. We all get together and share some confusion, some humanity we're searching to find. And that's what I see in theater. So I'm looking every night to see if there's a little different thing that's happened here or something's, there's been a pause over here, or do we take some words out? I have to tell just a really quick story, if I may.
Sure.
This guy sitting to my right is a great editor. I mean, he trimmed this from 120 to 74, and he was ruthless.
No.
And so I had a scene where somebody's talking about these people that might be dealing in drugs down in L.A., and they say the cocaine's right there on the Lazy Susan between the cashews and the caviar. And I thought, yeah, I was really proud of my little line, my little puppy, between, because then we can picture them, you know, snorting it.
Right.
And I thought, this is, and Richard goes, get it out. And I go, Rich.
Now, it wasn't that simple, but yes, it was.
But you can take it from there.
Well, I mean, every once in a while, listen, there are things that are wonderful lines and fabulous turns of phrase that for whatever reason, the context that they're in doesn't add to either the story or perhaps it's gilding the lily a bit, and it's just a smoother scene without it. And there were not many of those. There were a few of those.
Yeah, but
and
I thought you hit the button 9 times out of 10. It didn't need to be there.
No.
But you love your puppies.
Yeah, sure.
But you
do
have to drown them.
Sure you do.
Kill your babies.
Because there's a metaphor.
I prefer to
these puppies. That's the other thing. We got to take a little break, then we'll come back, and I will have these gentlemen tell you more reasons why you should see their shows. AJewishJoke.com, Chops2016.com. We'll be right back.
Wonderful, it's marvelous, you should care for me.
I have had an amazing time in the last 50 minutes talking with my old pal Phil Johnson, who is here, co-written a show and stars in the show, A Jewish Joke. It's at Victory Gardens through next Sunday. The website is ajewishjoke.com. And Michael Richlewski and director Richard Shavzin, They're the brains behind a show called Chops. Richard directed. Michael wrote it. It's a theater with through August 21st. The 14th. Website
14th.
I've just extended it.
Thank you.
From your mouth.
With it. Yes. It's been extended. Buy tickets for that August 20th. And I have to extend it. Chops2016.com is the website. Gentlemen, I'm going to give you the opportunity. Why? And this would be an interesting experiment. Phil, why should someone come see your show? Tell them.
Why?
Don't tell me. Tell them.
Okay, tell them. It's about a guy who has never really believed in anything very fully his whole life.
How old is the character in the show?
Let's see. How old am I? 27? He's about 55, 60. He's kind of schlubbed his way through life, as I think a lot of us have. And then you get to a moment where you got to say, what do I really think is important? What is my life really about? He's a funny guy who's always entertained. He's always up in front of people. He's successful. And finally gets to the moment where he kind of can't use those tricks anymore. And so he's got to put himself in real dire straits and say, this is what life's about for me, finally. And then he has to make a choice. But it's been great because I don't think the audience expects that it's going to be so funny. I'm going to pat myself on the head and say that it is a funny play about a funny person, and it turns.
Yeah.
And I think people they like that it's surprising. It doesn't really go where you think it's going to go.
Now, I'm going to ask you two. That's a very intriguing description of the show. It certainly intrigues me. You two, Richard and Michael?
I guess I would say that two different things. First of all, it evokes what Michael has written, evokes an era that's sort of a classic nightclub scene. Mr. Kelly's, which was at the end of where Rush Street ended.
Yeah, where Russian State
come together at Bellevue. Yeah, it was
Lou Mariano Park.
Just the best location for a nightclub, between the coasts. And it was an era. I mean, those clubs, Mr. Kelly's and the Black Orchid and the London House and the Happy Medium, Figaro's, Sinatra and Liza Minnelli and Ella Fitzgerald recorded an album there. Sarah Vaughan recorded an album at Mr. Kelly's. Mort Saul and Dick Gregory and Carlin and all of Lenny Bruce and Alan King, all the classic comics. And it evokes the period brilliantly. And on top of that, underneath what you're left with is a real poignant sense of what it means to perhaps lose a step. Do you accept it? Do you fight it? Are you not as sharp? Do you no longer have the chops, or do you? And that question obviously is answered differently for every person, and sure, it's answered differently for every person on the stage.
Mm. I think we all know people in our lives who are pretty convinced they got it down, whatever it is that has to be got down, and that nobody really can fool them in the long run. And they're, when push comes to shove, they're still as sharp as a tack, and they see that as themselves. Because, we value our worth and our ability to maybe not be fooled. And not only people we know, family members or things, he's always saying how he knows everything, he's always saying this. And I think this play has three guys that sort of believe that they've got it. And Richard said there's also maybe the challenge if they do have it. And what happens to them when they discover that they don't have it?
That sounds so similar to Phil's thing, to how you have to confront.
Yeah.
Everybody, manufactures in a way themselves.
Yeah. It's a very dramatic moment.
Yeah.
But underneath this play is something much darker and much more elemental that will really rattle your cage, but I cannot reveal it here. Unless you invite me in for another. If you invite me back,
doesn't have anything to do with this donkey in the midst.
No. It's got nothing to do with donkey. That's some sort of democratic
thing.
Thank God. You gentlemen have been really something. I mean, the theater community is one that that I've been around a long time, and there are so many good people in it. I'm glad you, Michael, found out.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to have
in a real professional way.
We've had 20, 30 actors and directors come in already. They, you know, a lot of them know me. They hug me. Say, great work, man. You know, you feel good. You feel good.
Yeah. What's next?
I have 5 more plays in the drawer that are pretty much done.
How long have they been in the drawer, though?
Well, the first one was put in 1883 during the presidency of Grover Cleveland Alexander. The second one was in 1911. I've got a piece called What I Learned at the Movies that I'm trying to shop around right now for people out there in radio land.
That's great. You know. And, Phil, you're going on to New York. This thing has the feel, a Jewish joke has the feel of something that you'll be doing for a long time.
That's my hope. I hope people like it.
And you, if you'd stick with Michael, then it'd be, you know.
Who knows?
Ride those 6 scripts right to the stars.
we've worked one or two of his other scripts together. And I can't be more thrilled than to do a play that's never seen the light of day before, because new work is the backbone of the American theater.
Yeah, and I just think it's also the new, it's the backbone of Chicago theater.
Amen.
When you think of, you know, Little David and David Mamet and his plays, and Greg Mosher is his director. Yeah, no kidding. Theater people, Richard Shavzin, Michael Rishlewski, also a teacher at Schurz High School, the alma mater of Herman Kogan. And Phil Johnson, it's great to see you after all these years, Phil, and it's great to meet the two of you. And I'm excited, could not be more excited for all of you. And next week,
thank you, Rick.
Sometime during the show, I'm going to play some songs by Michael's father, and I'll get you on the phone.
Sounds great.
Tell me and all the other people why we're playing those songs.
The Wabash Blues, yeah.
I can't wait. I cannot wait.